The headlines this hour. Millions of Muslims from across the globe are converging on the Iraqi holy city of Karbala to commemorate Arba'in. Pyongyang says it has staged what it calls a simulated tactical nuclear attack drill in response to joint military war games by the U.S. and South Korea. Also coming up, thousands rally in front of the French military base in Niger to renew calls for the withdrawal of French forces from the African country. Welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Millions of Muslims from across the globe are converging on the Iraqi holy city of Karbala to commemorate Arba'in, the 40th day after the anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam and the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. People from all walks of life are marching toward the holy city, most notably from Iran. Senior Iranian government officials have made multiple visits to the border crossings in recent days to ensure a smooth passage for pilgrims to and from Iraq. Experts say it is significant to keep alive the movement of Karbala, which is a movement against terrorism, fascism, and despotism. Imam Hussein and 72 of his companions were martyred in the Battle of Karbala in 680 AD, while fighting courageously for justice against the much larger army of then a tyrant ruler, Yazid. Will Iran and Iraq inaugurate the construction project of a major railroad as part of a growing partnership between Tehran and Baghdad? The Shalamcheb-Basra Connection Project will link the major port city of Basra in southern Iraq to Iran's vast railway network through the Shalamcheb border crossing. It is estimated that the project will take between 18 to 24 months. The project had been under discussion for years before an agreement was reached in 2021. It was inaugurated by Iran's first Vice President, Mohammad Mokhber, and the Iraqi Prime Minister, Mohammad Shia al-Sudani. Mokhber says the project will be completed over the next 2 years. Iran and Iraq are political and economic partners and are determined to enhance their bilateral trade relations. Iranians are marking the National Day of Fight Against British Colonialism, commemorating the 109th anniversary of the martyrdom of Rais Ali Delvari, a great national hero and independence fighter who led the anti-colonial struggle in southern Iran. However, this year the occasion is even more special, as many Iranians have had the chance to mark this day, where he has been laid to rest. Gisumi Shahpati reports.
Remembering a national hero, a symbol of resistance. Many Iranians this year are marking the National Day Against British Colonialism at the resting place of a man who organized a popular resistance movement against British troops that had invaded Iran in 1915. Rais Ali Delvari's martyrdom anniversary has fallen just days before Arba'in, allowing pilgrims who are taking part in the Arba'in walk to mark the occasion at his resting place in Wadi As-Salam Cemetery in the Iraqi city of Najaf, where the pilgrimage begins.
Rais Ali Delvari was a hero just like Martyr Qasem Soleimani in our days. Actually, as Iranians, I think we're lucky that we had quite a number of these freedom fighters. For example, the Jangad movement of Gilan and the Tangistanis who formed the main resisting power against the British Empire in southern Iran.
We know that he was a young man living in the city of Delvar in Bushehr province, and he successfully fought against the British invaders. That is why we have to keep his memory alive and educate our young generation about him.
Martyr Rais Ali Delvari played an important role in the fight against colonialism. As Iranians, we owe him our independence and freedom.
Rais Ali Delvari was born in 1261 in Delvar in Bushehr. After the sudden entrance of British forces into the southern province in 1915, he led the Iranian army in their fight against British colonialists. Rais Ali Delvari was ultimately killed by Anglo-Indian forces following months of bloody clashes. Today, his home has been turned into a museum and registered as a national heritage in Iran. And to commemorate him, his martyrdom anniversary, which usually falls on the 3rd of September, is marked on the Iranian calendar as a national day of fight against British colonialism. Decades after his martyrdom, Rais Ali Delvari is still an inspiration, not just for Iranians, but for freedom fighters worldwide. Yusuf Shahmadi, Wadi As-Salam Cemetery, Najaf.
Fresh details have emerged from a major Israeli sabotage attempt against Iran's defense industries that was thwarted by the country's intelligence. Military officials say that a professional team led by Mossad was trying to equip missile connectors with explosive circuits, which could then be programmed to blow up at a specific time.
It's a plot out of a Hollywood movie, but with serious repercussions. The shadow war between Israel and Iran. This one involves an Israeli plot to sabotage Iran's defense industry, including missiles, the biggest military sabotage attempt against Iran in the past 100 years. It is one that failed, however, just in the nick of time. The agency's statement reveals the scope of the operation. The intelligence unit of the defense ministry thwarted one of the largest sabotage plots targeting Iran's missile, aviation, and aerospace military industry. This sabotage was carried out under the guidance of the Zionist intelligence services and their agents. A network of agents sought to introduce defective parts into the production of advanced missiles, specifically defective connectors from abroad. The defective parts were discovered by the Defense Ministry Information Protection. The plan was to equip these connectors with explosive circuits. If that was done successfully, the connectors could be programmed to explode remotely at any time.
The Israeli spy agency Mossad has been at the heart of anti-Iran plots for decades. Simply put, it has targeted Iran in order to stop its advancements in a variety of fields. But apparently, what has been of interest is Iran's nuclear program and defense industry. This includes targeting scientists and nuclear facilities.
Under the false pretext of preventing Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons, Mossad has been carrying out a campaign of sabotage and cyber attacks on Iran's civilian nuclear program for quite some time. One of the notorious ones was the Stuxnet virus. In April 2011, Iranian government official Ghulam Reza Jalali stated that an investigation had concluded that both the United States and Israel were behind the Stuxnet attack. Mossad has also methodically assassinated and murdered Iranian nuclear scientists, from magnetic bombs attached to the side of their cars, to the use of poison, and allegedly the use of a killer robot remotely used as an assassin. Additionally, Israel has also targeted Iran's nuclear facilities. Israel's targeting of Iran's defense industry, in particular its drones and missile program, does make sense from Israel's point of view. Iran has made extraordinary advancements in these two fields and military hardware overall. But all of these destructive actions, which Israel has not claimed responsibility for, has not been able to stop Iran's advancement. From Israel's perspective, it makes strategic sense, though only a temporary fix. There's an Iranian saying that says, "Don't play with the lion's tail." Iran may have thwarted these acts of sabotage, but for how long will its patience last when it comes to Israel?
Tens of thousands of Israelis are back on the streets of Tel Aviv for the 35th consecutive week to protest against what they call the judicial coup.
I came out here today with my family so that we can protest against the judicial coup. It's a crucial time right now. We need to come out. We need to be in the streets. We have a big vote in about 2 weeks, and I can't tell you that I'm hopeful, but we are not going to stop coming out until we're able to turn back and make sure that everyone has someone else watching over what they're doing. Nobody has the power to make changes at their whim.
Mass protests against the so-called judicial overhaul have been ongoing since it was proposed by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's extreme far-right cabinet back in January. In August, Israel's Supreme Court began hearing the first in a series of appeals linked to the overhaul, which set up an unprecedented domestic crisis. Israel is now facing public unrest, labor strikes, and mutiny by some members of its military. The opposition believe the cabinet is aiming to weaken the judiciary and to prevent it from being able to maintain checks and balances on the cabinet. They say the protests will continue until they are able to repeal the legislation. Israeli troops have violently clashed with Eritrean refugees using live fire and stun grenades against the demonstrators who were protesting against the government in the East African nation. Some 160 people were injured, some of them critically. Many others were arrested. The violence broke out around an event organized by the Eritrean embassy to mark Revolution Day, which commemorates the start of the Eritrean War of Independence against Ethiopia in 1961. President Isaias Afwerki has ruled since Eritrea gained independence in 1993. Human rights groups have condemned his government as being highly repressive. Eritreans make up the majority of the more than 30,000 African asylum seekers in Israel. The Tel Aviv regime has been under fire by rights groups for racism and discrimination against non-white individuals. Political commentator Netfa Freeman says Zionism promotes a system that conflates ethnicity and race.
The issue is predicated on the fact that we're dealing with settler colonialism, the system of settler colonialism where land is taken away from an indigenous people, and all settler colonial states are predicated on a racism against, and these are European settlers, and Israel is really no different than that. It's modeled after U.S. settler colonialism. Both Israel and settler colonialism, South Africa under apartheid South Africa, are modeled after the United States, and the complexity becomes when things advance and racism is no longer, is frowned upon globally. Then they have to, fend it, protect it as, or defend it as something else. In Israel, the complexity is that Israel Zionism promotes something that conflates ethnicity, race, and nationality and nationhood. So as a settler colony, it also gives the sanctity of a Jewish people that's also predicated on religion as well. And so this makes it even more complex, but at the same time, there has to be this caste system for settler colonialism and for the justification of the theft and the sustenance of settler colonialism and Zionism in this case.
The Democratic People's Republic of Korea confirms it staged a, quote, simulated tactical nuclear attack drill at the weekend with mock atomic warheads attached to two long-range cruise missiles. The missiles were fired from the country's west coast toward the Yellow Sea. Pyongyang said the operation on Saturday was a counteraction drill in response to the joint military activity by the U.S. and South Korea. The launches come 3 days after the DPRK fired a pair of short-range ballistic missiles as part of a similar drill. This comes as Seoul and Washington have ramped up their joint military exercises with advanced stealth jets and U.S. strategic assets. Pyongyang says the U.S. and the South are pursuing, quote, confrontation hysteria, adding that it views such war games as a rehearsal for invasion. Washington and Seoul claim that they are defensive in nature. Of course, Wanda Frank Smith says the U.S.-backed U.N. sanctions against the Democratic People's Republic of Korea are an impediment to Washington's engagement with Pyongyang.
The U.S. always says it's open to negotiations, but really the big elephant in the room for the United States, of course, is the U.S.-supported United Nations Security Council sanctions against North Korea that prevent North Korea from trading with the international community. North Korea has said on many occasions that it will negotiate with the U.S. if it drops its hostile policy. It views the promotion and continued sanctions against North Korea as hostile. It prevents North Korea from developing its economy and has some other consequences that go far beyond the sort of goals of those sanctions to make it difficult for North Korea, for example, to grow its own food. If it doesn't have access to oil, it doesn't have the drivers in the economy that that fuel tractors, for example. So it has a whole knock-on effect that strike the North Korean people and not necessarily the leadership. So again, it's these United Nations Security Council sanctions that U.S. might have to, and certainly the council should look at, suspending in order to encourage North Korea to come to the negotiating table, draw down the tension, and really put things on another foot moving forward.
Not to Taiwan, domestic flights and ferry services to surrounding islands have been canceled as Typhoon Haikyuu makes landfall on eastern Taiwan. The Civil Aeronautics Administration says 37 international flights have been canceled for Sunday. Taiwan's President Tsai Ing says that this is the first typhoon to make landfall on the island and to cross its central mountain range in 4 years. Almost 3,000 people have been evacuated, mainly in the south and the east. The military has mobilized soldiers and equipment to help with flood relief and evacuation efforts. Thousands of people in Niger have held an anti-French rally demanding that the former colonial ruler withdraw his military personnel from the West African nation. The demonstration was held in front of a French military base in the capital Niamey. It came a day after the military rulers accused Paris of blatant interference in the country's affairs. 1,500 French troops are currently stationed in Niger. The junta in power has ordered French troops to leave the West African nation until September 3. Niger also last week called on the French ambassador to leave the country within 48 hours. Paris brushed aside the decision, arguing that the junta has no authority to make such a decision. On July 26, the military takeover ousted President Mohamed Bazoum and installed General Abdurrahmane Tchiani, the leader of the presidential guard, as head of state. Ukraine says the southern Odessa region came under attack by over two dozen drones early on Sunday. Ukraine's South Military Command says the attacks targeted the civil infrastructure in a port on the Danube River. The military says the attacks left two people injured and caused a fire in the port area. The military did not specify which port was hit, but Ukrainian media reported blasts in the Reni port. Russia has yet to comment. This comes days after Ukraine said that a major drone attack on a Russian airport in Pskov region destroyed two transport planes and seriously damaged two others. Ukraine has vowed to return the conflict to Russia, and in recent weeks, it has increased drone attacks on Russian territory, including the capital Moscow. Russia has been responding with its own drone strikes on the Ukrainian capital Kiev and other cities. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. Thank God our nation is well prepared to pursue spiritual values, and so far it has also taken many steps, but the road is long and the road to spiritual values is such that a person must strive throughout his life. Perhaps many assume that material comforts and having bank deposits, property, or owning land or parks and the likes brings happiness to a person. This is a mistake that a person makes.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Dear listeners, welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. About the subject of good conduct, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, "Make friends with God's servants on whom He bestows His mercy and blessings, those who are in His good grace by being Muslims and faithful, and be kind and loving as heart." This speech of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi is about making friends in Islam. You know, friends are an integral and important part of our social life, as they contribute greatly to the development of one's personality and they affect many aspects of our lives. In the Holy Book of Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, "A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. On that day, friends will be one another's enemies, except for the God-weary." Surah Az-Zukhruf, verse number 67.
يا ربنا صل على طه النبي وآله
صلى الله عليه
صل يا
The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, while explaining the impact of friends, says, "Man is influenced by the faith of his friends. Therefore, be careful of whom you befriend." In the 71st verse of Surah At-Tawbah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, "The believing men and believing women are allies of one another. They enjoin what is right and forbid what is wrong, and establish prayer and give zakat and abi Allah and abi Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and His Messenger. Those Allah will have mercy on them. Indeed, Allah is exalted in might and wise." This ayah highlights the qualities of good companion. True friends will stay by your side come what may. They will be your guide when you go wrong and your support to enjoin right. In other words, a believer is a mirror of another believer. You know, a true friend is the one whose presence reminds you of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and in whose presence you feel comfortable practicing deen. This is what Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi is telling us about making a good friend. Okay, now for ending, let's just recite this sentence of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi in regards to good conduct. In that regard, he said, "Make friends with God's servants on whom He bestows His mercy and blessings, those who are in His good grace by being Muslims and faithful, and be kind and loving at heart." Thank you very much for listening to us. Until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Welcome back to Aperture. In the first part of the program, we follow Javad, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, to the south of Iran and saw the most amazing combination nature could match together, the desert and the sea. We also met the region's native inhabitants and got acquainted with their unique lifestyle. Stay with us as Javad travels to other villages of the region to discover the culture and customs of the people.
In the past, staple grains for all of Iran came from Sistan and Balochistan. But what for severe drought spells and misguided planning over the years, the province has completely lost that status. But today, in some areas of this province, and in the Bahu Kalat district in particular, all kinds of vegetables and tropical fruits are cultivated. There is a mango tree that's in full bloom, exploding with blossoms. In about 5 months, they will turn into delicious, juicy mangoes. This is heaven indeed. Walking around in the palm groves and other gardens in Bahu Kalat gives me a lot of peace. One of the most beautiful things I come across during my stroll is the Baluchi squirrel. The Baluchi squirrel, also known as the stripy or palm squirrel, is a unique species of rodents living in parts of Iran, Pakistan, India, Nepal, and Bangladesh. The most distinctive feature of this mammal is the dark stripes on a white background on its back. In the past, the inhabitants of Sistan and Balochistan believed these stripes were the fingerprints of the gods. A typical Baluchi squirrel is between 13 and 15 centimeters from its head to the end of its rump, and its tail adds an additional 14 to 19 centimeters to its total length. It's quite refreshing to see Baluchi children playing and gallivanting around in the banana groves. Beautiful, pure souls, a product of their serene, peaceful surroundings. Children of Shir Gwaz spend the whole week waiting to go to the fruit groves near the village to expend some of their inexhaustible energy. What they also do is they cook their traditional food on their own, and just like their elders, they gather around, sing, and play. The kids here have distinctive, innocent faces. They are just gorgeous. And they're all wearing their traditional costumes, boys and girls alike, all wearing traditional clothes. They are among the oldest, most original tribes in Iran. They're very noble and very patient. They are a people with a lot of patience. And although some of them don't have good living conditions, they are very patient folks. They're so content. The Baluchi culture is the perfect example of a culture of nobility and peace. And those cultural traits are readily visible in the architecture of the old houses in this village. The architectural design is endemic to Balochistan. You can't see anything like this anywhere else in Iran. There are also new houses in these areas with designs influenced by Indian and Pakistani cultures and architectures. One of the characteristics of Baluch families is their large populations. Wherever in the village I go, I'm surrounded by many of the little angels offering a breath of fresh air
after a long day of hard work. They fill my heart with peace and joy. Perhaps one of the reasons these kids are so happy is their beautiful, tranquil, natural environments. Just as influential is the beautiful, happy colors used in the clothes that these little girls have on. Clothes that are embroidered by the artistic hands of their mothers. Hand embroidery on colorful clothes and fabric is among the most important crafts of Baluchi women. And fortunately, Baluchi women have been able to preserve this exquisite art, a skill handed down through generations. It's noontime. It can get really hot in Shirguaz, even in the middle of winter. But the boys of the village have a good solution to fighting the scorching heat. What they do at a time like this is jump into the waters of Shirguaz River and swim to their heart's content. These children usually play together in groups. The day offers an opportunity for me to make a return to the beautiful carefree days of my own childhood. Live life as an uninhibited, unabashed explorer of the unknown. Playing with these children serves as an outlet for the negative energy in me. Although the children in Shirguaz don't have much to entertain themselves with, they're all growing up happy, healthy, and strong by playing in groups and making the best of what their natural environment provides them with. No computers to spend the whole day on, playing virtual computer games that don't involve any physical activity, video games that have taken the place of playing outside for many kids today, outdoor experiences in nature, and plenty of physical activity that a growing body craves. These children's only toy is nature, going up trees, diving into the river and swimming, playing with animals, singing songs and helping their parents at home and on the farm, frolicking around and playing with stones and pebbles. This non-stop joyful mobility is the reason behind these children's physical health and happy disposition. Very soon, I leave the village and set out for my next destination. I have to travel 250 kilometers to the west of Baluchistan, to a place 80 kilometers north of the city of Nikshar, a name that reminds me of my country's beautiful north. Given its unique geographical location, Baluchistan has a diverse and strange climate. Some parts of this area is affected by the tropical climate of India, in the south by the Sea of Oman, in the west by the Jasmurian inland basin, and in the north by Lut Desert. Surrounded by these different climatic conditions, Baluchistan features diverse lifestyles and various plant and animal species. Baluchistan is a dry, water-thirsty land. The average annual rainfall in the province is around 110 millimeters. But the important thing is, all that water comes down in only a couple of torrential rainfalls that cause the rivers in the province to overflow their banks. The ensuing flooding leaves behind a trail of destruction every time. The people here tell me they get snow and blizzards in some winters too, because of the mountains in the Gorgan area. Perhaps you'll find it interesting to know there is a place named Gorgan in Sistan and Balochistan province. But no, it has nothing whatsoever to do with the city of Gorgan in the north of Iran. This area is comprised of around 11 villages punctuating this mountainous area. It can get freezing cold here. The people of Balochistan say, except for Mount Taftan and Mount Basman, the only other place where you can see snow in the highlands is the same Gorgan region in Balochistan. It can get really cold here. Because of the altitude and the relatively good rainfall here, this valley usually has a good amount of water, and abundant water means life and prosperity. The people of Gorgan are either farmers or orchard owners or livestock keepers. The most important thing for them to be able to do any of those things is to have clean drinking water. The people of the first village I visit are very kind and hospitable. In my conversations with them, I realize all the young people in the village are busy working simply because there is enough water. Everyone has something to do. They're all grateful to God for all their blessings. Their biggest asset is contentment. I could say most of the things I've seen in this village were built from scratch by the men and women living here. They are all content with what they have. They even have electricity. They live a beautiful, simple, and healthy life, away from the hustle and bustle of city life and excesses that distract human beings from their true self and from nature. The Baluch community leads a simple lifestyle in their simple homes in Balochistan. They don't even expect a paved road. The peace that these lovely people exude is a breath of fresh air against the vicissitudes of city life. I am so at peace when I'm in their fold. Before long, I resume my journey and arrive in the village of Archenik, a bucolic settlement second to none. But it isn't the architecture and natural environment that lends Archenik its beauty. The most beautiful thing I come across is the hospitality of the local inhabitants. Archenikis are hard-working, hospitable people. Moments after I reach the village, one of the elders comes to welcome me and invite me to his beautiful house. And the family gives me the red carpet treatment. Personally, I have a lot of respect for the culture and customs of this lovely ancient tribe and have tried my best not to have a negative impact on the culture or any of the good social norms of this community. Instead, I learned from them things that I had no idea about before I met them. I've had many trips to far and exotic places in Iran. And on those trips, I saw many and varied village houses and nomad tents. But nothing like the teeps in the Gorgan region. Beautiful, modest homes that offer peace and tranquility, just like their natural surroundings. Village elder Pir Muhammad fills me in on how they build their houses. My trip is nearing its end. That means I have to leave the beautiful Sistan and Balochistan province and head back home. I leave with a bag of experience and memories as sweet as the dates of Gorgan. And I do so knowing that I haven't done any harm to the natural environment and the culture of this ancient tribe.
Well, I'm quite sure that this week's documentary about Iran's natural wonders intrigued all our audience across the globe. And I hope it inspires you to come and explore the hidden treasures of Iran. And that's it for this week. Do keep in touch with us. And until next week, goodbye.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب
الله. This is. This
for
is
a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیکم, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. This is the program of For a Better Life. I am Beta at your service. And in this episode, again, we're going to talk about something really controversial and important for having a better life. As I told you in the last episode, we're talking about reasons why we have to search and seek the knowledge of knowing more about the creation of this world and the Creator itself. But in this episode, we're going to talk more about the consequences and the results of this action of knowing God more and more. The first thing I want to mention in this episode is knowing God and the progress of science and the correlation these two have with each other. Pretend that a friend has come from a trip and has actually brought a book as a present for you. He says that it is an excellent book because the author of this book is full of information by a very great scholar who is accurate and expert and a genius in his own field. You will most certainly not study this book carelessly. Rather, you will concentrate on every sentence and even the choice of words made. And if there be a sentence there that you do not understand, perhaps you will spend hours and even days whenever you can until the meaning of it becomes clear to you. Why? Because the author of this book is not a normal average person, but rather a great scholar who considers every word he uses carefully. But if the opposite were true and they had said to you, this book may appear to be beautiful and pleasing on the outside, but the author is not very literate and has no base in science and hasn't taken any care. It is clear that you will only quickly glance at a book and whenever you find something unclear in it, you would say like, okay, this is because the author is uninformed and it's a waste of time for a person to study this. The world of creation is like a great book in which every creature forms a word or sentence in that. From the point of view of a person who worships God, every atom of this universe is worthy of a study. So, a person who has faith in the array of delight of worshiping God will make use of a special sense of curiosity and studying the secrets of creation, and it is this very fact which helps science and human knowledge to progress. See, it was really beautiful and touching that faith of Allah and believing in that key sentence that every creature in this world is a key sentence is a word which is written carefully and by an expert who is perfect. It will actually keep you going in this road of knowing more and more and seeking knowledge and progress. But a materialist has no reason to discover the secret of creation, for he believes that nature is senseless. If we look at a work of a materialist scholar, it is in the same actual rank because he accepts God, but calls him nature. Why? Because he accepts an order and a program in nature. This is really beautiful, you know. Even the people who claim that, okay, there is no God, we don't believe in everything like that, they believe it. But, you know, they call it in different ways, like nature, like coincidence, and so on. But, at the end, all of these kind of explanation for these order that we see in nature, there should be a power, an absolute power that we call it Allah. So let's keep the episode here and go for a short break, then we're going to come back. For a better life, welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to IRB English Radio. We were talking about the consequences and benefits of searching for actually the knowledge of knowing more about creation of this world and knowing God. The second thing I want to mention after the first one, which was actually the correlation between knowing God and the progress of science, the second one is knowing God and hope, which is a very beautiful and delicate relation here. Whenever a difficult and complicated event takes place in the life of a human being, whenever all doors are somehow closed, one senses weakness, hopelessness, and loneliness. When confronted by these difficulties, a person with faith in God, then seeks his hope, which he gives. A person who has faith in God doesn't see himself or herself as being alone or powerless. He or she does not despair. He or she does not sense weakness, inability, because God is above all difficulties and everything is easy for him, because he has the absolute power. With hope in his kindness, support, and help, he or she will struggle against the difficulty and will use all of his or her energies. With love and hope, one will continue his or her endeavors, efforts, and will overcome the difficulty. Faith in God is a great place of refuge for a human being. Faith in God is the substance of steadfastness, is the substance of love, is the substance of trust. And faith in God always keeps hope in hearts alive. Because of these, individuals with faith never attempt to commit suicide, because attempts at suicide come from despair, a complete lack of hope, and a feeling of having failed in life, and so on. But individuals with faith neither lose hope, nor do they sense failure. Let's keep the episode here. We're going to go for a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. It's all I need. It's all I need. All I need. All I need. All I need. Oh, 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 oh. All I need.
You need to me.
love is all I need.
Welcome back. This is IRIB English Radio, and you're listening to the program For a Better Life. We were talking about the consequences of actually seeking the knowledge of knowing yourself, creation, creator. And I counted two, actually, consequences up to here, and we're going to go for the third one, and I bet, like, it's the most important one. Knowing God and peacefulness. As you know, in this modern world, we all feel like we are depressed, we are in rush to do things that we are supposed to do. There is always a pressure on us. We have to do this, we have to do that. And the only thing that most of the people just are looking for is peace. If you ask many people who can be rich, healthy, perfect, beautiful, what do you lack? They would answer like this: we need peace. Okay, so peace is something rare, at the same time something really common in this modern world. And psychologists say that mental and psychological diseases are greater in our time than in any other time in the history. They say that one of the factors is anxiety over future events, anxiety over death, anxiety over war, and anxiety of fear and failure. They add, among the things which can take anxiety away from a person's spirit is faith in God. Because whenever an anxiety wants to penetrate one's spirit, faith in God pushes it away. A God who is kind, a God who helps one meet one's needs, a God who is aware of his servants' condition, and if they turn towards him, he helps them and frees them from anxiety. Because of this, a real believer always has a sense of actually peacefulness, and no anxiety exists within his or her spirit. Or, let's say it in this way, that there may be some anxiety in a life of a real believer, but he or she can overcome it easily because he has a great sense of peacefulness and a great belief in the kindness of God. Whatever such a person actually does is for God, even if one suffers a loss, one seeks his replacement from him. Such a person even actually enters the war front with a smile. So I'm going to end this episode again with one of the most beautiful verses of Holy Quran. It is those who believe and confuse not their beliefs with oppression that are truly in peacefulness, for they are on right guidance. Thank you for listening to me. I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.